You're listening to the HR Happy Hour Show with hosts Steve Bowes and Trish McFarlane. Since 2009, the HR Happy Hour Show has been bringing you thought leaders, workplace and technology experts, academics, and more to take on the most important and interesting topics impacting work, human resources, technology, and the workplace. Learn more and listen to all the show archives at www.hrhappyhour.net. Hey, welcome to the HR Happy Hour Show. My name is Steve Bowes, coming to you live from sunny, almost warm Orlando, Florida. I feel a tiny bit guilty this week of leaving behind friends and family, 2 feet of snow where I live in the Northeast, Rochester, 2 days of school canceled, which almost never happens in Rochester. I feel bad, kind of. Not completely bad, because I'm here at Benefit Focus One Place in Orlando, joined by two great guests, Shan Fowler from Benefit Focus, Senior Director of Product Strategy. Shan, how are you?
I'm doing great, Steve.
How are you? I'm well, making a triumphant return to HR Happy Hour.
That's right, yep. Two years ago, we were sitting in a room just like this, and you were admiring my beard, which I still appreciate very much. So
still
thank you very much.
Very robust. Best beard in HR Happy Hour Show history, as I recall. And a new guest, a new friend of the HR Happy Hour Show, who last night at the reception, I pitched to come on the podcast, not realizing he was already booked for the podcast. Chris Condolucci. Chris is the principal of CC Law and Policy. Chris, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and it's an honor to be here again, being my first go at the HR Happy Hour. So here I am, looking forward to it.
And great to have you here, and we'll get to what each of you guys do in a second, but I do want to make a couple quick shout-outs to the Benefit Focus team. First of all, for having me at the event. It's been a fantastic event, and for hosting the HR Happy Hour Show, which, gentlemen, cheers around. This is a true happy hour. We are recording this at
cheers
around 5:30 Eastern time. It is happy hour, and our friends at Benefit Focus hooked us up for
and
a true happy
and
hour.
A little shout-out to Steve.
Thank you.
Shout out to Steve. I understand that your session this morning was fantastic.
I felt so. I even tweeted myself how good it was.
Giddy up.
Yeah. And that was another thing about the cowbell too. Yeah. There are a lot of cowbells today. You'd think after a while the cowbell would be kind of annoying. You might be wrong. I don't know.
Yeah, it's like little kids when they have the little, like, whatever noisemaker they have, or a dog when he has a little squeaky toy. You just love it. Every time you hear it, you know.
Hey, we've got a fantastic topic we're going to talk about today, which is really on the minds of lots of people, both inside benefits and HR organizations, but just normal people as well, because the things we're going to talk about, which is really what's happening with the artist formerly known as the Affordable Care Act,
right,
and where it might be going in 2017 and what organizations should be thinking about. I want to talk about that for sure with Chris and Shan. But Shan, maybe just to start, give us a little bit, give me 90 seconds, 2 minutes on just Benefit, for folks who may not know,
yeah,
Benefit Focus, and then a little bit about this event.
Yeah. So Benefit Focus was founded in the year 2000, right around the dot-com bubble era. In Charleston, South Carolina, that's where our headquarters is. One of our taglines is all of your benefits one place.
Okay.
And we are an enterprise benefits management platform that provides large employers and health carrier customers and ancillary and voluntary benefits customers with a single platform for shopping for, managing, enrolling in your benefits, all of the above on a single cloud-based platform. We're currently at One Place, which is our annual user conference. We have about 700 people here all in, and it's a phenomenal experience for us. We are very, very proud and humbled by our user community,
sure,
the users on our platform, and they are here in full force, and the electricity that that we generate from it is great, and just hearing phenomenal speakers and great presentations like the one that you gave earlier today, it just really kind of reinforces that this is, benefits. The benefits business is something that, providing for families is something that is really valuable to, our story,
right,
and the story of those who are using
our
platform.
Yeah, oh my God, it's so important, and it's mm-hmm. so, it's humbling in some ways too, right? Mm-hmm. When you're dealing with people and the care, their care and the care of their families, it's amazing. And the other thing for folks who may not know this as well, but many do, is you also would partner with lots of the HRMS vendors, like the mm-hmm. core HR vendors. So a company might have an SAP system that they're running for their HR, or an Ultimate Software system that mm-hmm. they're running for their HR, but then they'd bring you guys in to help manage their benefit side and mm-hmm. the experience the employees would have, the enrollment experience and the making those decisions and the
right.
life events would be through your platform.
Absolutely, and I think that what we found is that and I think that today's subject is a perfect a perfect segue to this, but the complexity that happens in the U.S. benefits system, the combination of regulatory complexity and integration complexity
right.
and eligibility complexity, it just all adds up where we have, as you said, we have some great partners in SAP SuccessFactors and others who we are essentially the benefits module
right.
that they look to, because benefits are so complex that they go with something that we go with as well, which is a sort of best in breed
right.
model.
Mm-hmm.
You get the best in breed for the tasks, the HR tasks at hand. So we've really become that enterprise benefits management of choice for many of those platforms.
Yeah, thanks for setting that up, Shannon, and covering that as well, because I want people to understand like how you guys fit in the larger ecosystem of HR systems and mm-hmm. core HR systems and even payroll systems, and that's probably a whole other conversation we could go on with for a while, and it's interesting and you can learn more certainly about all that stuff at benefitfocuses.com and their website. Chris, I want to bring you in. Chris, tell us a little bit about you first, what you do, and then we're going to talk ACA, repeal, replace, all that stuff.
Fun stuff. So thanks again for having me. I really appreciate it. So a little bit about me. I'm actually an employee benefits attorney by training. Had the opportunity to also work for the Senate Finance Committee.
Okay.
And was on the Finance Committee from April of 2007 to September of 2010, and therefore was there during the ACA development debate, and actually had the opportunity to participate in the development of portions of the ACA,
okay.
including the exchanges, the state insurance market reforms, and all the taxes under the ACA. And now I run my own legal and policy practice, focusing really primarily on the ACA, a little bit of benefits, but primarily ACA.
Chris, thanks so much. And we need a lawyer to help us figure out what...
Absolutely.
I'm going to tell you what. I feel like I follow the news. I follow the HR and benefits news. Maybe not the political news so much. And this isn't really a political discussion, right?
Uh-huh.
So I don't want to really get into, who's wrong, who's right, who's got a bad idea. I just want to kind of try to talk around what's happening, what do we think will happen, and what does that mean for employers primarily, mm-hmm. right? The folks who listen to this podcast. So I'll start with you, Chris. Where are we right now? It's the middle of March. It's March 15th as we record this. Where are we right now with ACA and what might be happening next, to the best you can even figure out as an expert in this?
Yeah, no, there's a lot of uncertainty for sure. And what I try to do, and I think Shan can attest to this as well as others, I try to cut through the noise, because there's so much noise out there on one side, on the other. And I just want to really almost look to the facts and talk about the specific factors. And let me kind of start with that,
okay,
and talk just briefly about process, right? Because we hear a lot of talk about repealing the ACA. So
right,
how can
repeal and replace. I've heard that a thousand
yeah.
times.
So how can Congress right. repeal and replace the ACA? There's really two ways to do it.
Okay.
One is through what I refer to as the normal legislative process. And the normal legislative process actually requires 60 votes in the Senate to pass any legislation.
Okay.
Be it repeal, be it replace, be it repeal and replace, you need 60 votes through the normal legislative process. Republicans in the Senate only have 52 seats, so that means they need 8 Democrats to join them. That obviously is not going to happen, right? So ACA, repeal and replace, is not going to happen through the normal legislative process. There's another option, however, which is called the reconciliation process. Now, I'm sure a lot of people that listen to our podcast today have either read about the reconciliation right. process, heard people talk about it. It's a very complex process.
I got to tell you what, I have no idea what it is either. My sort of depth of knowledge on this comes from, and I'm not really kidding, like the I'm Just a Bill Schoolhouse Rock song.
But
remember that one?
That's instructive.
I know that.
That's instructive, though.
Carry on.
Yeah.
So reconciliation.
Yes.
What is this?
This reconciliation process allows legislation to be passed by 51 vote margin,
okay.
as opposed to the 60 vote margin that I mentioned. But in order, as I refer to it, to get the luxury of passing legislation by this 51 vote margin, there's constraints and there's conditions. And these conditions are important for talking further about ACA repeal and replace.
Okay.
And those conditions are the legislation can only impact taxes and can only impact spending.
Okay.
So, for example, all the taxes under the ACA can be repealed through this reconciliation process.
Okay.
The Medicaid expansion, the premium subsidies for folks in the individual market, those provisions can be repealed because they're, quote-unquote, spending. They can be repealed through the reconciliation process. Guess what cannot be repealed? The insurance market.
Let me guess. Individual mandate. How about that one?
Well, that one like, can be. That
oh,
one can
I,
be.
I sort of guessed on that one.
It's a penalty.
Is it? God.
Yep.
See? I'm glad I have you guys here because I do feel like I know a little bit about this, but I don't. I think a lot of folks might be listening to the show are kind of in the same waters. Like,
right.
man, we thought we know how this worked, but
oh, yeah.
maybe we really don't.
But here you go. Insurance market reforms. They can't come out
because mm-hmm.
they do not have a direct impact on taxes or spending. They have an impact,
okay.
mind you. But not a direct impact, and therefore, they don't meet the rules in order to get into this legislation. So, for example, the provision to cover adult children up to age 26, the no cost sharing for preventive services, the no annual lifetime limits.
Okay.
All of that's going to stay in the law if a repeal and replace bill, legislation, can actually be passed, which right now is uncertain.
Right. Okay. Man.
Yeah, I mean, I've had so many conversations with Chris, and I think that, you know, these things in particular, like the reconciliation, which, by the way, just, you know, interesting historical tidbit, it's how the Affordable Care Act got passed as
Ooh,
well.
In the first place.
Reconciliation.
Okay. Interesting. Okay.
But it's just so fascinating, and the kind of you know that old game Mousetrap where, you know, you set off something here and it ends up having, you know, an effect over here. Some of what I talked to Chris about is that complexity
yeah.
where it's like, well, what about this? Why can't we get rid of this? And he, you know, very thoroughly and very sort of clarifyingly explains, you know, what those things are. So it's great to, you know, have a Chris in your life.
That's nice.
At least my wife says that.
That could be
a new tag. I got that going for
yeah.
me, which is nice.
All right, so where are we at? So we've got these two alternative avenues or directions that can happen to affect what the new president and the new majority has at least stated publicly are their goals. What do you, I mean, I don't want to put you out on a limb to speculate too much, but what do you sort of think is going to happen, I don't know, in the next, say, 6 months? That planning window, which is going to take employers up to their own open enrollment mm-hmm. seasons themselves, right? Mm-hmm. What's our best guess?
And this brings me back to the important point that everyone needs to understand, that you can only repeal and replace portions of the law.
Okay.
Because, again, you can't do it through the normal legislative process. You can do this through this reconciliation process, but that's constricted.
Right.
So going forward, Republicans have adopted a repeal and delay strategy where they were simply going to try to repeal all the taxes and all the spending, as I mentioned earlier.
That's not as zingy as repeal and replace.
That is not as zingy, but it still has got an R and an R.
Yeah.
So, gotcha. So they maintain the R. So repeal and delay.
Okay.
Actually, that's a D.
That's a
so,
D. It's an R&D.
Yeah. See? I
doesn't
guess
work
I,
as well.
I guess I skipped second grade.
That's probably why.
Repeat second grade.
That's probably why we didn't hear that.
Spelling.
You know, at the primary.
But actually,
you know?
Why I said the R, repeal and repair.
Repair.
Thank you. Repeal and repair.
There you go.
That's a little catchier.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
So repeal and delay was first adopted, which was repeal as much as you can through reconciliation and have this protracted time frame over which you can develop replace plans.
Okay.
But that strategy ran into what I refer to as the repeal and repair crowd.
Okay.
Because they wanted to also replace portions of the law simultaneous with repeal. But that crowd ran into or came to the reality of you can only replace certain portions of the ACA through the reconciliation process. So we are now today in a stage where Republicans are trying to repeal as much through the reconciliation process and replace as much through the reconciliation process, which by definition is limited.
Limited, okay.
Which causes problems. Which is why today it's unclear whether enough Republicans in the House and enough Republicans in the Senate are going to actually vote for the repeal and replace reconciliation bill that is currently under consideration.
So the answer in a nutshell is there's a couple of options. Here's what we think could happen. But none of this, maybe I think I'm right, mm-hmm. none of this stuff is actually passed yet, right? None of these various scenarios of repealing what they can, none of it's even really, that process is still mm-hmm. pending. Is that fair to say, Chris?
100%. And what I want to impress upon everyone listening to this podcast and what I say to Shan in presentations that I give and clients that I advise, mm-hmm. the ACA is still the law.
Right.
It is still on the books. Mm-hmm. So the individual mandate is still on the books. The employer mandate, which we'll talk about a little bit later, is still on the books. The employer reporting requirements, which again we'll talk a little bit about later, are still on the books. And so therefore you need to comply unless and until you're told otherwise. Mm-hmm.
And this goes into an overarching theme that we talk a lot about at Benefit Focus. And in fact, our CEO, Sean Jenkins, talked about it yesterday in the keynote presentation down here at One Place, which is this idea of ongoing regulatory change. And it's just this the idea that we need to remind ourselves that regulation and the perspective of the legislative perspective and the regulatory perspective, compliance, if you will, is something that is it drives a lot of decisions, but it's ongoing. It's not, you know, we're not talking about something that is kind of, was sprung on us and, there was nothing, we were just tiptoeing through the tulips before this. There's right. always something that is, is necessary, and this is just another chapter in that, in that story.
Yeah. I mean, I think while change is, I suppose, inevitable and maybe constant, mm-hmm. it the level of uncertainty, at least to me, just mm-hmm. again, the observer from the outside who tries to stay reasonably informed, the level of uncertainty seems just ridiculously high mm-hmm. right now. Like if there was like a volatility index or an uncertainty mm-hmm. index for the stuff, I think it would be through the roof. Like it's, mm-hmm. I'm glad this is a true happy hour to have a drink for this, because I feel
right,
like I need
exactly.
one. And I don't really have
it
to.
Takes the edge off.
But
yeah,
I was about to say, I don't have to worry about this, but I kind of do, because
yeah.
kind of doesn't everyone need to worry about this to some extent, right? Because it could impact not just our organizations, and
right.
if we do this for our job, if we're an HR or a benefits leader in an organization, but just as an individual employee, maybe with a child we're trying to cover who's mm-hmm. 26, or the individual mandate kind of thing we talked about earlier, it's unsettlingly unclear.
Yeah, and let me jump in to say this, because you kept asking about, kind of what's going to happen. And I wanted to set things up by talking about the strategy that really began in earnest the day after the election
okay.
back in November and where we are today. So let me at least mention this. So the contents of an ACA repeal/replace reconciliation bill was unveiled last Monday. So
okay.
not this most immediate Monday, but March the 6th.
March 6th, okay.
And that was done in advance of the House committees on the Ways and Means and the Energy and Commerce Committee, which, what they call a markup, they favorably approved this legislation out of committee, which is just part of the legislative process.
Right. I know. I'm just a bill.
I
remember that part.
Yep. Went through committee.
Yes.
Now, the Budget Committee is going to consider it this Thursday.
Okay.
What, March?
That's tomorrow. We're recording 16th. This on a Wednesday, by the way, so yeah. that would be tomorrow as we record this.
Budget Committee will consider it. Then the House Rules Committee will consider it next week, and we expect a House floor vote the last week of March.
Okay.
Which then that House passed bill will go over to the Senate.
Right.
The Senate will either change it, which is likely that they will, and the Senate could potentially pass the bill. Still uncertain whether the votes are there, but let's just assume for talking purposes that the votes are there and it passes. Then that means the president will essentially sign this repeal slash replace reconciliation bill into law, let's say by mid-April. And again, let's say that happens.
Okay.
And sorry to step on.
Yeah, no, let's keep going.
One more thing.
Yep.
Because this goes to what should employers care about?
There we go. Mm-hmm. That's what I want to get to next.
In the ACA repeal and replace bill, it repeals the employer mandate.
So this was, for my edification, again, if you had 50 employees or more, you were required to offer reasonable levels of health care.
Affordable minimum value plan.
Or pay a fine.
Correct.
But per employee, I think the fine was, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Now that penalty will go away. So with that penalty going away, should this be signed into law mid-April, that means an employer won't have to worry about the employer mandate. They won't have to worry about the measurement period to determine, you know, how many hours their employees worked.
Right.
They don't have to continue offering an affordable minimum value plan and making sure that they meet those tests that are in the statute. We have to get into those details, but just you don't have to meet those tests any longer. So that's gone. That's going to provide a decent amount of flexibility to employers for good and for bad. Some employers might say, well, yes, well, then I'm going to go back to offering coverage to only a segment of my population, or I'm not going to offer an affordable minimum value plan to some folks. But others, employers might say, well, hey, I've been offering this type of coverage to this segment, this type of coverage, I will continue that going forward for a period of time.
Now, Chris, let me ask you this. Again, thinking about like the personal impact of something like this, if that all were to pass in the sequence that you described and the mandate would to be repealed, essentially, could an employer then, like on May 1st, say, okay, I'm done, no more, we're not offering coverage anymore, and folks who would stay covered for 2017, would they be out? They'd be kicked out of their plans? Could that happen? At an individual employer.
Yeah. I'll give you the typical lawyer answer. It depends.
Okay.
But it really depends on the legislation.
Okay.
Because if the legislation has an effective date that is retroactive.
Oh, I see.
Okay. Retroactive back to January 1, 2017. Or better yet, back to retroactive to January 1, 2016, such that the employer mandate is repealed retroactive for the 2016 tax year. And right now, the legislation that's being considered through these committees, as I informed you, there's a retroactive effective date, such that if the employer mandate is repealed again by mid-April,
right,
it will be repealed for 2016, 2017, and beyond, which to an extent means that the employer mandate effectively will never be enforced. Because the Obama administration has yet to enforce the employer mandate for 2015.
Oh, okay.
And if it's repealed for 2016 and 2017, well then, you obviously know the conclusion.
Yeah, so, and a couple of things, again, going back to the employer perspective, I think that, you know, there's a real, I've seen more than anything, and I think this goes into the Twitter presidency as well, that there's a signal versus noise thing going on right now where there's so much information, and it's tough to know what, on a daily basis, what is happening versus what is not happening. You know, it's still going through committee, and so for now, getting back to what Chris said before, there's still an employer mandate. There's still reporting needed. Mm-hmm. So it's, what we are advising our customers and what we've talked to our customers about is, you know, keep the ship on steady on course until we hear otherwise. And we will react as quickly as we have in the past to that. But for now, full steam ahead.
Yeah. Let me do a quick reset, Chris and Shan. This is the HR Happy Hour Show. My name's Steve Bose. We're live in Orlando at the lovely Disney Dolphin Hotel and Resort. I love this place.
Oh, yeah.
I'd love to come here. I'm with Chris Condolucci from CNC. Is that right?
CC Law and Policy.
CC Law and Policy from Washington.
Yes, sir.
Right? And Shan Fowler, yeah. Benefit Focus. Hi. Best beard in HR happy hour history. Woohoo! Back for a triumphant return. I feel like I'm letting both of you guys down because this is maybe one of the shows where I've known the least about the subject, like getting into the show. I'm learning. I'm taking down all kinds of notes here because it's fascinating.
We're here for you, man.
Yeah. I love that. And the benefit focus team here for us.
Oh yeah.
It's happy hour for sure. So, So Shan, going back to what you just said, stay the course. Mm-hmm. As Chris said as well, ACA is still the law, mm-hmm. right? At least until mid-April, right, as far as we know.
That'd be the earliest.
It does sound a little bit like, you talked about the employer mandate disappearing. Is there another one or two kind of really important employer-focused things that would also change in mid-April if that process played out as you described, Chris?
100%. To pick up off of what Shan mentioned about the employer reporting requirements, I alluded to it earlier.
Okay.
Here's something really important for your listeners to know. So, as stated, we've said it a couple times, Shane, you just stated it 2 seconds ago, the law is still the law.
Right.
So you got to comply with the employer reporting requirements. So let's say the law is repealed mid-April, as
right.
I speculated. Well, that repeal and replace law will actually keep the premium subsidies that are available currently in the individual market under the ACA for 3 years, for 2017, 2018, and 2019. Now, what's important for your listeners to understand is the reporting requirements were put into the law to help the IRS enforce the employer mandate.
Okay.
So if the employer mandate goes, logically you say, great, I don't have to worry about the reporting requirements. But here's what some folks miss. The reporting requirements are also there to help the IRS determine eligibility for the premium subsidies.
Okay.
So even though the employer mandate goes, and the premium subsidies stay for a period of time, it is likely that the Trump administration will continue to require employers to report on their 1094C and furnish their 1095Cs to their full-time employees. Mm-hmm. So in short, the reporting requirements will likely be kept in place. They're not in the repeal bill as we now know.
Okay.
It's being considered. And for purposes of administering the premium subsidies, which will continue to flow, it's necessary to keep those reporting requirements around. Mm-hmm.
And I think along those lines, and Chris, I'd love to hear, we've talked about this a little bit, but something that we're not talking about is, let's just say hypothetically that the American Healthcare Act does not pass, it doesn't get through.
Okay.
That still doesn't mean that we're sort of back at back in square one. There's also executive action, which could come through the Secretary of Health and Human Services, Secretary Price. Mm-hmm. He has, a fair amount of leeway in terms of what he could decide simply to not enforce. That's part of the Affordable Care Act. Am I going too far, Chris?
No, it's a fair statement, and it's part of the speculation. So, let's just say this bill does not get enacted.
Okay.
So does that mean that the Trump administration comes out and says, we're not going to enforce the employer mandate? Mm-hmm. There's precedent for the Trump administration to come out and say that because the Obama administration did it for really two full years. Mm-hmm. They didn't enforce the employer mandate. So will the Trump administration do the same thing? I would say if the law does not get enacted by mid-April and it kind of craters, that, I could see the Trump administration come out and saying, no more employer mandate, guys.
Yep.
Maybe similarly with the individual mandate, we're not going to enforce it. And again, when it comes to the employer reporting requirements, however, it's a tough nut to kind of crack, to figure out where they're going to go with it, because the orthodoxy is we don't like, or Republicans don't like, erroneous government payments or fraudulent behavior of folks who are not eligible to get a premium subsidy yet trying to get one. And if you don't have a reporting requirement to filter out who's eligible and who's not, you're going to have these erroneous and fraudulent payments.
Yeah, this,
and that doesn't fly with
this reminds me of something I heard. I forget which piece of what it was, but the news story about there's some document or some policy statement that devoted 6 or 8 pages of 60
lottery,
pages to people who win lotteries. Mm-hmm. And they were still claiming subsidies or Medicaid or something like that.
Yeah,
it just seemed... All right, again, this is not a political show. We're not going to go down that path. But I see what you're paying about. If we're running on and we were elected on, at least in theory, right, mm-hmm. controlling spending, controlling waste, eliminating waste and things like that, that does make perfect sense that would be a focus.
Yeah, you know, and one other thing that would be good to talk about is that there's a strain of consumerism that's in the law as well. And I think even going back, you know, into the Affordable Care Act, you know, what it did, I think at a minimum, is kind of accelerate some of the consumerism, conversations that we've had, healthcare consumerism conversations that we've had, the adoption of high deductible health plans.
Right.
We have a report that we do called the State of Employee Benefits, and we've shown that 60% of groups on our platform are now offering a minimum of one high deductible health plan, and so there are some considerations that go into that as well. And one of them that's in the reconciliation bill is to increase the HSA minimums to coincide with the maximum out of pocket.
I noticed that in some of the data that was presented yesterday, that those two numbers seem to be converging.
Coming together, yeah.
Yeah, and the total maximum out-of-pocket for either plan choice seemed pretty close.
Yeah.
Within 10% maybe anyway, right? 10 or 12%.
Yeah, totally. And the way we kind of look at this is very similar to a lot of what you talk about, Steve, with technology, just the advancement of technology. Whatever the regulatory climate, you know, there are things that consumers and, you know, the change in workforce, that, you know, millennials in the workforce, there are demands, technology demands, that are marching right along. And you see that's, you know, continuing to happen. So, you know, there is this uncertain regulatory climate. But what we've seen and what we've heard from our customers is, I still need to focus on cost. I still need to focus on complexity. I still need to focus on, making my employees smarter consumers. Compliance figures into that heavily, but it's not the only thing.
And we didn't really talk about this, and I didn't think we would talk about this, but it struck me, it was one other thing maybe that's important here as well, as benefits are still really, really important as a talent attraction tool and a talent retention tool. So in the case, Chris, the employer mandate, say going away, or we're not going to, either it's going to go away or we're just going to really clearly say we're not going to enforce it. You know, I think for a lot of employers to say, okay, well, I'm going to drop coverage now, you know, good luck. That is a signal to their employees as well, like, hey, maybe it's time to go find another place to work, right? Just because we know how important benefits are to that overall employer value proposition as well, right? And despite whatever the law says, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm convinced that even if there was, and I know maybe I'm getting ahead of myself on a particular issue that we're going to talk about, but even if there was a limitation placed on the tax preference for employer-sponsored insurance, which is something that's been considered,
right,
in replace of the Cadillac tax, which is something, let's talk about that maybe next. I'm just teeing that up. But even if there was a limitation on the tax preference, and even if there was a tax benefit available in the individual market with no employer mandate, to your point, benefits are so important for attraction and retention value, right, that I don't see many employers dropping coverage in the face of those kind of as it's being characterized as almost three strikes against the employer system, dismantling the employer system. I firmly believe that is a misnomer, and it really is rooted, or my belief is rooted in the fact that employers offer benefits to attract and retain, and there are some industries that will drop coverage because some of those employees, that workforce, doesn't quite value benefits that maybe some other industries might. And maybe that's okay too, but it certainly isn't going to be a dismantling of the employer-based system if those type of policy changes are made.
Yeah.
Let's just take a look at the past 7 years. There were some dire predictions about employer-based coverage that were made about the Affordable Care Act. In 2011.
The employer mandate was going to drive.
Oh, yeah, yeah. In 2011.
We were going to cut employees. We were going to reduce hours, right?
Totally. McKinsey said up to a third of employers were going to drop coverage because of the Affordable Care Act. That never happened. In fact, employer-based coverage actually started, going up a little bit. And that was a bill that wasn't seen as particularly, friendly to employer-based coverage. What's happening now is more of a focus on employer-based coverage. So I don't, I think that some of those predictions, I would wholeheartedly agree with Chris that, you know, it's there's the regulatory environment, which you have to pay attention to, but, you know, there's also talent management and, you know, just recruitment and retention, and you can't ignore those things.
Yeah, there's no way this is just a compliance issue, right? Compliance is, of course, incredibly important, and as we know, complex and uncertain. It's not that at all, really. It's probably not even the more important part of this issue either, I suppose, if you really break it down, depending on, as you said, depending on the industry you're in, the competition for talent, and your goals, right, as an organization, right? What kind of an organization are we? You know, are we the kind of organization that's going to cut benefits the first chance we can, or the law says we can, or are we a different kind of organization, that doesn't feel that way? I know a couple of organizations that, you know, they pride themselves on, no matter how bad their business got in the recession, right, through 2008, 2009, we never cut benefits. Increased employee premiums to employees. We never, reduced services. Yep. We just didn't. We found a way to cut other things, but those are the things we kept. We kept pretty whole. Got Matt. I feel like I know a little bit more. So this is good. But I know I don't know enough. And I have a feeling that folks listening to the show, many of them will kind of be in the same boat. If we could kind of, I don't want to oversimplify things and say, okay, let's in 5 minutes tell people what they should do. Mm-hmm. But if I'm a benefits or HR professional or even just a business owner right now, I mean, what should I be looking at? What should I be monitoring? Where can I go? Let's say I don't have access to Chris, because my answer is going to be I'm going to call Chris up and ask him. But let's say I don't have access to Chris. What should I be doing, say, now and into through this April timeframe you talked about, Chris, and beyond? Yeah. What are kind of the things I should be thinking about?
So I'm a bit of a media junkie, and so I'll pitch a couple of things. First off, and this is horribly self-promoting, but go to benefitfocus.com.
No, promote.
We actually have some recorded podcasts with Chris and myself in some cases talking about this, sort of reviewing what we've reviewed here. So after you're finished with the HR Happy Hour podcast, head over to Benefit Focus to look at the webinars, and we've got some webinars that are up and going there. Another good place is in terms of talking about signal versus noise.
Right.
Kaiser Health News does a great job. It's a nonprofit. They have some great information. I personally like the reporting that's done by Vox.com.
Sure, Vox.
Ezra Klein and Sarah Cliff. I think they do a really good objective job. And Chris, what are some others that, I mean, Politico has a ton of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, Politico, Modern Healthcare, Inside Health Policy, those are
employee benefit
the type
news,
of trade news that I, for example, read. Mm-hmm. But to your question, let me close on the Cadillac tax.
Yeah, you brought that up.
It is something that I did bring up. I think our listeners, your listeners would be interested in, but it also really goes to your question about what should employers be looking for and at, and what should they be concerned about. So the Cadillac tax came into law through the ACA, and really at the end of the day, it's a limitation on the tax preference for employer-sponsored insurance. Now, the employer community despises it, as does the labor community, because they have historically opposed any limitation on this tax preference, which I will call the quote-unquote exclusion. So for this purpose, it's the exclusion. Now, in a previous draft of the repeal and replace bill that we discussed earlier, there was what's referred to as a direct limitation on the exclusion, somewhat similar to the Cadillac tax, but just different in the way it's administered. So without getting into detail about the difference between the two things, it was a little bit different.
Okay.
But at the end of the day, it limited the exclusion just like the Cadillac tax did. Now, that provision fell out of the final draft that's being considered. So if this law or if this bill becomes a law mid-April, it will not have this limitation on the exclusion. But there was a delay in the Cadillac tax, so it hasn't been fully repealed. The Cadillac tax has been delayed until 2025. So again, should this bill happen mid-April, the Cadillac tax will have been delayed until 2025.
Okay.
Now, last point. Employers or folks listening to your podcast here shouldn't cheer that the Cadillac tax has been delayed and that this limitation fell out, because tax reform is going to be considered by Congress at the end of this year or early next year. And there is a strong, there is a high, high probability that Congress relooks at this direct limitation on the exclusion. So folks shouldn't be too excited about what they're seeing in this repeal and replace legislation, at least as it relates to this limitation on the exclusion, because there's another bite at the apple that Congress may take. So continue to look over your shoulder as these type of tax policies are discussed, debated, and even potentially enacted.
Yeah.
And we would just say from an employer's perspective, you know, like we said before, stay the course. I wouldn't go so far as to say, you know, sleep with one eye open, but because I think that it's, you know, it's ongoing regulatory change, you know, and so it's good to stay informed.
Yeah.
Stay as informed as you can, but don't be very careful to look for things like this has been enacted or this is coming, and you know, and look to your sources, your normal sources like SHRM and other, an HR executive
right.
and
yeah,
others
yeah.
that kind of really cut through that noise and say, this is what you need to worry about right now.
Yeah, and you know, for me too, like, I mean, I'm going to try to revisit this a couple of times this year. Like, I have not talked about this subject in a while, right? I think a few years ago when ACA was being kicked around, we had a couple of folks who were somehow involved in what was going on with, with getting that put together. And I think that might have been the last time I talked about it on the show. So that's kind of a bad on me, I think. I'm going to have to try to stay on top of this again. And maybe what we should do is
Well, hey, maybe man, we should I'm
have,
your Chris.
Maybe we should have an emergency. Like,
if he's the Chris in
I'm your
life.
I'm your Chris, man.
Maybe we need to have like an emergency pod.
Get the band back together.
In April.
Get the same back to when the band back together.
Yeah,
let's do it.
If this passes and this is going through, we have an emergency pod and
get a bucket of beers.
Yeah, we'll do that. We'll do that. Because I think it's important to stay on top of it and learn more and make sure that folks are kind of hearing what's happening and not, you know, as we know, right, in this era of fake news all the manner of news, it's easy to get distracted, it's easy to get confused, it's easy to get caught up in the emotion of this thing too a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think for HR and benefits leaders, it's really, really important to separate.
Yeah.
I mean, it just you have to, and maybe not easy, but you've got to separate what you think personally and what you emotionally believe is right or wrong or fair or unfair from what's actually happening, or your others.
And
you're
how
gonna,
it affects your employees.
Yeah, you're going to let down your employees if you do that. If you get too caught up in, you know, yelling and screaming on one side or another.
Absolutely.
So,
yep.
Guys, this has been amazingly fun. I think we probably just scratched the surface of it, but I don't want to keep you guys from Orlando, Disney, and all the fun. I really appreciate Shan Fowler, Chris Condolusi, taking your time out of the day today to be with us on the HR Happy Hour show. So thanks, guys.
Thanks for coming to Orlando, Steve.
BenefitFocus.com, of course, right?
For
resources, information. Chris, any shout-outs, any links? Where can we find Chris? Do we find you?
My email is pretty easy. It's Chris, C-H-R-I-S, at CC Law and Policy. It's all one word, all spelled out, cclawandpolicy.com. Feel free to email me, man. I'm happy to talk to anybody, happy to talk to you. Again, get this band back together.
We will. We're doing it. Because now I know who am I going to try to figure out
there
what's happening.
Go, yeah.
It's Chris and Chan.
As Sean would say, let's wonk it up.
Yeah. Nice. So thanks, guys. Thanks, Benefit Focus team. Team is here. There's some team here. Cowbell. Yeah, no, that doesn't get annoying as much as you hear it. It doesn't. It's amazing. So thanks so much from the HR Happy Hour show. It's been a great show, been a great event. Thanks for listening. Anything for me? Oh, Ultimate Software next week. We'll be doing a pod from there. I'll be out in Las Vegas. My triumphant return to Vegas.
Nice.
Time to make some wagering on some March Madness.
That's what I was about to say. It's
perfect timing,
yeah.
Man.
See if you can place any bets on the American Healthcare Act.
Yeah, I wonder if there's odds on this.
Yeah.
I'll be your inside track.
Yeah, thanks. Shout out to Trish McFarlane, who couldn't be with us today. We'll see her next time on the show, of course. And thanks, everybody, for listening to the HR Happy Hour show. We will see you next time. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the HR Happy Hour Show, your source for information and conversation on work, the workplace, technology, and more. Learn more and listen to all the show archives at www.hrhappyhour.net.